This year, wildfires in Oregon have burned a record 1.8 million acres, according to the Oregon Department of Forestry. But there's one unique tree that's learned how to live with seasonal wildfires. That special tree, the Baker cypress, has unfortunately been overwhelmed by the sheer volume and frequency of modern-day wildfires. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. Your questions or comments are welcome by email at jx@jeffnet.org. Forestry professor Jeff Kane from Cal Poly Humboldt is leading a project funded by the USDA Forest Service in collaboration with ecologist Kyle Merriam to reestablish the Baker cypress in areas where it was nearly destroyed by the 2021 Dixie Fire. Both Jeff and Kyle join me on the exchange. Welcome to you both.
Hi there.
Hello.
So before we get into what's so special about the Baker cypress, let's learn what's special about you both. Kyle, tell me about the work you do.
Yeah, well, I work as an ecologist for the U.S. Forest Service. I work primarily in northeastern California, so on the Modoc Plateau, in the Lassen area, and in the northern portion of the Sierras.
And how long have you been doing that work?
I've been working for the Forest Service for about 20 years, so
okay,
while.
And Jeff, tell me about your work at Cal Poly.
Sure. I'm a professor here at Cal Poly Humboldt in the Department of Forestry, Fire, and Rangeland Management. I teach a wide range of courses, both undergraduate and graduate, in related to forestry and fire. And I also conduct research with students on a variety of projects that relate to kind of fire ecology, fuels management topics.
Okay. So tell me, Jeff, what's special about the Baker cypress?
Yeah. Well, one of the things about Baker cypress that's really unique is just how rare it is. It is a species that occurs across about 11 different kind of populations in Northern California and Southern Oregon. And, some of these populations, are really small, like a handful of acres, and then others that are larger, up to like 1,000 acres. So it's not very common. So it's kind of a special natural heritage of this region. And then it also has a cool adaptation to fire. It produces cones that stay closed pretty much in anticipation to fire. So once fires, and often pretty high intensity crown fires, come through, the fire opens the cones, the parent trees will die, and then these seeds that are released will germinate, and then the new population, the new cohort, will come in. And so there's other species in the region that do this, but this is one of the handful that do.
Well, it does sound pretty special. So when the fire comes through, the Baker cypress is regenerative.
Yeah, yep, exactly. So again, the parent tree will die, but those seeds will germinate. And, from the work that Kyle's done, we see that, it's almost the hotter the fire, the better. So that's pretty unique, where other species that don't have that same, serotonous closed cone would often die in very intense fires.
Well, that is interesting because...
not regenerate, yeah.
To the Baker cypress, fire's okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's more complicated than that. It's not just any fire, but high-intensity fire that's not very frequent is kind of the ideal situation for this species.
So, Kyle, you're an ecologist. Aren't forest managers primarily concerned with reducing the threat of wildfire?
Yeah, definitely. That's a big focus for the Forest Service and other management agencies right now. And unfortunately, fire suppression has been a longstanding approach of forest management. And as a result, not only have our forests that are adapted to frequent low severity fire suffered and become relatively unhealthy because of fire suppression, are species that need fire, infrequent, high-severity fires, such as our endemic cypress in California, have also really declined as a result. So fire suppression has had negative effects both on our species that need frequent low-severity fire, as well as species like Baker cypress that need infrequent but high-severity fire.
So if we're suppressing fires, how do we shift from too little fire to too much fire?
Well, those two things were really directly related. You know, because of fire suppression, we had just densification of our forests, a real buildup of fuels. And then recently that combined with climate change, so increasing temperatures and increasingly dry fuels have really led to this, incredible increase in both the size and the severity of fire. And although Baker cypress and our other cypress species in California need high severity fire, they also need a long period of time between fires. And that's because they need time to start producing cones. So most of these species, and Baker cypress in particular, doesn't start producing cones until it's about 14 years old. And then it takes quite a bit more time for it to accumulate enough cones on that tree so that when the cones are opened by the next fire, there's enough seeds to really restore the population. So we usually say that these cypress stands need about 30 years, somewhere between 30 and 50 years, in order to accumulate enough cones so they'll really benefit from that next fire. And unfortunately, what we're seeing now, just when we have these, because of fire suppression, we're having these just very large, very high severity fires. And then we're seeing these areas burn again, sometimes within a period of only 10 or 11 years. And in the case of the Baker cypress population, we just recently had a population that burned after only 14 years. And unfortunately, those young trees had not had time to produce cones or to have, you know, mature seeds within those cones. And so we ended up losing most of that population.
Are you referring to the Dixie Fire in 2021?
Yeah, that's right.
I'm talking with forestry professor Jeff Kane from Cal Poly Humboldt, who is working in collaboration with ecologist Kyle Merriam on saving the Baker cypress. You can send your questions or comments by email to jx@jeffnet.org. And speaking of that, I have an email here from Luke Rudiger from the Applegate, and he says that there are two local stands of Baker cypress in the Siskiyou Mountains, and he's comparing the difference in how they've been managed. And he says one stand has burned four times in the last 70-plus years, but it's thriving, healthy, and it's expanding, and it's regenerating very well after those fires. But he said the Forest Service recently thinned the Miller Lake stand without public involvement or public analysis, and in doing so burned a lot of the large hand piles within the drip line of what he says is the world's second largest Baker cypress tree. And since then, the tree has waned and lost a lot of its upper crown, and he believes that's going to decrease the seed bank stored in the cones in future years. Why is there such a difference in the management, Kyle?
Yeah, unfortunately, the Forest Service, I think, struggles with managing species that are adapted to high severity fire. You know, high severity fires can be quite unpredictable. They can be dangerous. They're often, you know, because they're high severity, they're difficult to control. And so managers are often reluctant to intentionally set a high severity fire, because we can't necessarily assure that we will be able to contain it. And of course, we're worried about adjacent communities or causing damage to resources that are not well adapted for a high severity fire. So sometimes we do see these Forest Service units trying to use tools that they use for other forest types, like mixed conifer forests that are adapted to low severity fire. They try to take those same management approaches like thinning, piling, and burning, and use them in Baker cypress stands, which where they really are not beneficial. And so it's unfortunate, but I think that it's kind of an example of when you sort of have a limited number of tools and you try to apply them in the wrong situations, you can have some negative effects. And unfortunately, I have seen that approach of doing thinning and pile burning in cypress stands happen in other places. And it's really, I think, you know, it just points out that we need to do better education of both our land managers and the public, and then also try to just work together to think about how can we really effectively manage these vegetation types that require a really different kind of fire regime, one that we're not used to or really comfortable managing.
Well, speaking of education, Jeff, let's talk about your project. What's the focus? What's your desired outcome? And how are the students involved?
Sure. Yeah. So our project has a number of different parts to it. The first part was just going out and actually collecting cones from a variety of populations so that we can have a seed bank, you know, that is stored for later uses and reforestation and restoration. So students directly helped out and collected tens of thousands of seeds this past fall, of which a subset went out to be germinated at the Placerville Nursery down south from here in California. And those will get grown out. And then I think we have something like 5,000 seedlings that will get planted out next spring. And then part of the research will be to monitor the seedlings we planted out last year, and then the seedlings we'll plant out next year. And the goal of that research is to try to say, okay, which one of these populations seems to do well, which one's not so well, so that we can kind of cater reforestation restoration efforts to be successful. And then what are the conditions that promote success? Where do you plant them? Does that matter? And how does it matter? And so students will be working on that as well.
Well, it sounds like a big project. How many students are working?
Yeah, so far we have had seven different students working in different capacities. Mm-hmm. And so the site that Kyle was referring to that burned in the Dixie Fire, called Mud Lake, it's a research natural area. And when we wanted to reforest some of that population, Kyle realized we didn't have any seed from that. So that's an important part, is to actually collect the seeds that represent the genetics of a given population. So we have had seven students working on, you know, collecting cones, you know, planting seedlings, collecting data, monitoring the seedlings.
Well, it sounds like there's a lot of collaboration as well. You said that there's a nursery that's going to grow the trees once you collect all the seedlings.
Yeah, absolutely. And as with any research project, it usually is, you know, it's a village of people that are working. And one of the things that I really like about this project is that, you know, Kyle and I are working together in trying to, you know, consider not only the science part of it, but also kind of the practice part of it, you know, actually implementing these management projects.
Are there other similar forest restoration projects occurring around the Northern California and Southern Oregon region that you're affiliated with?
Within Baker Cypress, there's another population along with the story that Kyle told is, you know, in the long absence of fire, you know, what happens is other trees come in. They overtop the Baker cypress that can't grow quite as tall. And then eventually those Baker cypress will die. The cones will open, but then they fall and they can't germinate. So they really do need fire. And so some of these populations have gone without fire for so long that, you know, we have to intervene. And so in a site that is managed by the Bureau of Land Management, they went in and harvested, you know, thinned out all of those other trees, and then are going to try to burn it, and then we'll replant Baker cypress, which is a very intense way to manage things. It would be so great if we could try to, you know, reintroduce like high severity fire to these stands, but it often is very challenging.
I just want to be clear, we're not advocating for wildfires, but not all fire is bad. Some fires are good. That's all the time we have for the Jefferson Exchange today. Thank you, Professor Jeff Kane and Kyle Merriam, for joining.
Thank you.
Now stay tuned to learn more about the great outdoors, this time with preschoolers.